Even with all the efforts to bring about gender equity in our schools, a study that compares girls' and boys' test scores in math and science shows that those scores begin to diverge early. Scores are roughly equal in kindergarten, but it doesn't take long for the boys' scores to surge ahead. The roots of the disparity go deep, as contributing editor Neil Milner tells us in today's Long View. Good morning, Neil.
Hi, Chris.
We've been hearing variations of this for quite some time about STEM education in schools and the differences in test scores, yeah?
Well, we have, but this looks at it in a deeper sort of way, in a little different sort of way, based on their own studies and looking back at some older studies. And they find something that is a different kind of explanation, and it's one that is a little bit hard to overcome if you take it seriously. Here's what they found. That when a teacher is faced with let's take a step back. As you say, in kindergarten, boys and girls test on the kind of kindergarten math scores, they get about the same. By second grade and third grade, there's a significant difference. Boys score higher. Mm-hmm. So this seems to be the reason for it. When faced with a boy and a girl of the same race and the same socioeconomic status who performed just as well on the math test, in other words, same race, same socioeconomic status.
Other factors,
everything is equal, same school. The teachers rated the boys as more mathematically able than the girls. And as one teacher put it, who inadvertently said this when she was questioning the study, she said, look at my test scores. The boys and the girls test the same. It shows that if girls work hard enough, that they can do as well as the boys, not starting there. So there is this kind of, let's call it an implicit bias that, of course, is not purposeful, but is implicit. And that seems to be a fairly strong indicator of explaining those differences that begin at a very young time.
Was that a female teacher, the source of that quote?
I think that was a female teacher.
Which adds a layer of irony.
It adds a layer of irony. My guess is that they didn't report gender difference. I doubt if the gender differences would be there. But you're right. It's a woman teacher. And this, again, doesn't have to do with the kind of accountability issues that we tend to associate or test teachers on when there is a gap. If you think about the gap, the regular gap shows up all the time between black students and white students. And we have a fairly good indication about why that exists. And we have affirmative action and all those sorts of stuff. And so you work to alleviate some of those sorts of things. Help for the families, all those kinds of things. As I say, affirmative action thing. It's a little harder to figure out what you do here.
Yes, because we, you know, as in that Civil Beach story we just did, where a lot of the roots of those disparities in test scores are kind of socioeconomic in origin.
Well, that's right. The last figures I saw was that 80% of the variance on black-white test scores, the difference can be explained by socioeconomic status. So you always have to remember, when you're putting pressure on schools and on teachers and on principals to change, to narrow that gap, you're working with that strong shadow of socioeconomic status that is very hard to overcome in the school. This one is...
There's a long shadow over this one that I'm
wondering
about.
Yes, it is.
About,
it's a different one.
And I'm wondering if that long shadow is the whole, you know, hopelessly outmoded but still prevalent idea, you know, boys go into the workforce, women go into the, you know, homemaker.
Well, I think it may be even deeper than that. It has to do with the expectations we have. Let me say two things about that. The first thing is that the pattern of discrimination between men and women continues all the way up through higher education, through graduate school. And again, it appears to be implicit, different kinds of things. The second thing is, well, how do you deal with this sort of thing? It appears that what we have, and he doesn't call it this in his study, you have a kind of implicit bias. Now, we know by now from research on race and racism that bias is an integral part of almost everybody in some sorts of ways. And that doesn't mean that everybody's a racist, but it means that there is implicit kinds of things. And
what you might not even be thinking
about. What what Simplin, the researcher, says here, what you have is a cultural issue, and I would also say a psychological issue, mm-hmm. that it's implicit, it's subtle, it's built into the culture, and therefore it's harder to get rid of. I don't know, maybe you try by teaching people that they have this kind of bias, teachers, and these kinds of, let's call them predispositions, mm-hmm. that makes people feel less threatened. They have these predispositions, and maybe awareness helps you deal with them, as it apparently does in racial bias. But that's a big if, and that's looking at a very subtle part of everyday, you know, everyday life. So I think that this is a valuable study to teach us that there is something else going on here, a different kind of gap that is not so much overt discrimination, but has to do with the expectations and perceptions of teachers.
And those expectations are all part of the kind of thing, as we said earlier, the kind of things that we don't allow to come to the forefront of our consciousness, but affect the way we act, the way we think. The idea of calling on the smart boy in the class rather than the smart girl, even if you know that they're equally smart. I mean, there have been other studies in the past that have kind of talked
sure.
about that, haven't they?
There's been a fair amount of research on how expectations of teachers affect students, and that's one of the arguments, in effect, for integrating classrooms. If the teacher's expectations of students go up, all other things being equal, students' performance can go up. Mm-hmm. And that makes a certain amount of sense. I mean, it's like being a parent in some ways. If you have higher expectations for your kids, that's by no means a guarantee that they're gonna reach your expectations. But it's a self-fulfilling prophecy to some extent, and it raises the bar, and some of that goes on in teaching. So this is part of the integral part of teaching, and you can't blame teachers for this.
Yeah.
It's not something that's self-conscious, but you have to figure out a way to work with it and kind of counteract it.
What do you think can, you know, level the playing field?
Well, I mean, let's just look at this kind of thing here and mm-hmm. not look at the general gender bias. I think here you probably have to develop some kinds of awareness workshops. Now, I'm always real skeptical about workshops.
Yeah.
I think there's a whole lot of implicit bias workshops that are going on now that we don't know very much about in terms of effectiveness. So I'll say this. I'll advocate and I'll hedge. The hedge is a kind of a mathematical hedge.
Uh-huh.
Okay. I think that you try to develop these kinds of things. You have people who work with social psychology and work with the issue of bias. And you try to figure out a way to teach it in a non-threatening way. In other words, do what the old sexual harassment workshops didn't do, which were generally a failure.
Yeah.
But the second thing that you have to do, and secondly, you have to make this an organizational issue, not just, in other words, you can't just look at individuals. You have to look at what is the school doing to do this. The final thing is you got to assess these things to see if they really work. And that's the best that I can do right now.
Well, it's probably the best any of us can do at this point, Neil, but
I'll take that as a compliment, Chris.
at least we've identified the issue.
Yeah, right? It's a very interesting one. And I think it's a significant one. I've got a granddaughter who's 5, and I watch what she does in school, and it's interesting.
I bet. Neil Milner is the Conversations contributing editor of our regular segment, The Long View, and you can find links to more information about today's segment at hawaiipublicradio.org.